Hello and welcome to another episode of the Foreign Affairs Show with Avik Sen. As promised, today we'll be speaking about the developments in Afghanistan that are being tracked world over, the war and the peace process. Or should I say the so-called peace process. Under President Trump, he just gave a blank check to the Taliban in return for some domestic political benefits, or what he thought was domestic political benefits. I'll share a link to the article as well. There are studies that show that Trump might not have got much of a domestic lead out of a US troop withdrawal, but he was still willing to go ahead with it. So, coming back to the Biden administration, there's a tussle right now, and you see many white American academics and policymakers who have a say in this, and many of them with vested interests who are trying to influence things in a way. And it's not just that, the Americans are up to their own games yet again. They are not satisfied with having destroyed Afghanistan from 1979. Al-Qaeda and Taliban did not grow out of thin air. Bin Laden was trained by the CIA. It is a moral responsibility of US to fix what they broke. But just as humans are, no one will admit their faults. So let's not talk about the past mistakes and transgressions. Let's just ignore it. Let's talk about the present. So right now, what are the dynamics? Right now, you have a transition in US, and the Biden administration is actually probably going to take a better stance on Afghanistan than Trump. And there are people who are trying to pull him back. At the same time, it's not just US that has an interest in Afghanistan. Afghanistan did not fall into trouble right in 1974 when Pakistan started arming jihadists and training them to use against the Afghan state. Or when US and the allies started funding the so-called jihadists who were given the name Mujahideen. It started in the 1800s with the Great Khan, and the British had actually broken away Afghanistan into de facto two pieces much before 1974. And this fifth province dream of Pakistan is actually very much an extension of that. We have to look at the bigger picture. So I'll not get into these details right away because it will bore you. Let's start with what's the situation right now. On one hand, you have the US. On one hand, you have the Afghan government. On one hand, you have Afghan political elite who have various stakes, and many of them are willing to tilt in the direction where they see benefits. So it's still not a bad situation. And the Afghan elite, the Afghan political elite from the various ethnic communities that led the so-called jihad, the warlords, they had tried to monopolize the political control over the ethnic groups. But right now that is cracking, the veneer is cracking. But let's move away from local Afghan politics for a moment, because that's a tricky situation. I'll want to get into it, because things are better now. There's a lot more unity. I do not want to get into that angle right now. So, who are the other players? Obviously, Pakistan, who gives the Taliban sanctuaries, who funds them, who provides logistics for their drug trade that funds much of their so-called insurgency. Then you have various other actors. You have Iran, Russia, who want to play their own geopolitical games. So there are two interesting things that have actually happened that are again going against the Taliban. Unexpectedly, you see, I mean, unexpected for many people, but if you look at the bigger picture, neither Iran nor Russia wants Taliban to take over the whole of Afghanistan and to come in complete power. They just want to pester the US and hold them down there. No one wants dead diplomats. And you'll very well remember how the Taliban massacred Iranian diplomats. When it comes to Russia, Russia for a long time was very wary of the Taliban. Russia actually armed the former jihadists who formed the Northern Alliance against the Taliban and used them against the Taliban because the Taliban was working with elements hostile to Russia. Similarly, the Taliban was working with ETIM, that is hostile to China. But in recent times, things have changed a lot, and it's not just recent times, it's been for many, many years that China drove in a point through Pakistan that the Taliban can do whatever they want as long as they don't engage with ETIM from the Xinjiang province of China. So, this was working pretty well. And then you have a whole fiasco that happened in Russia these last few days. You had Zamir Kabulov, who, even though he's dismissed as a person who's a drunkard and he speaks shit, is actually a person who is playing drunken ball kung fu. He doesn't say things when he doesn't mean them. And Zamir Kabulov is known to be very close to Putin and influences his decision-making to a great extent. So, right now, I have not been able to understand with clarity after speaking to a lot of people who did not want to go public with their identities, and that's why I'm doing this podcast alone. Our understanding is that it was not just Russia doing a double game by the hot and cold approach of Zamir Kabulov and later the Foreign Minister Lavrov, who invited the Afghan Foreign Minister and tried to set things right. But actually, Zamir Kabulov might have stepped out of line and did some of this on his own. So right now things are in a flux. I'll be back with more details. But these are the factors. Again, when it comes to the Middle East, you see, when the so-called jihad in Afghanistan was funded lavishly by US and its allies, including in the Gulf, and even Iran was funding some of these jihadist groups at that point of time. I mean, you have friends and foes coming together to wreak mayhem on a tiny nation of people who have nothing but pride and don't want to trouble anybody as long as they are not interfered with. So, at that point of time, you had all the Arab Gulf nations funding these outfits. Today, there has been a rift. I mean, in the Qatar crisis, at that point of time, there was a very crude, I would say, but sustained propaganda campaign by the Saudis against Turkey and Qatar. And much of it was through Al Arabiya. You had pictures, for example, of Erdogan with Hikmatyar being passed off as support of the Muslim Brotherhood and like-minded groups with the jihadists. But let's not forget that right after the US, it was Saudi Arabia that funded much of contributed to most of the funds that went into the so-called jihad in Afghanistan. A jihad against Muslim Afghans. I don't even get it. How is it a jihad without that money coming in, without the illicit methods that came in? None of it would have been possible. But during the Qatar crisis, it was not just a propaganda campaign. There was a chance that Saudi Arabia, UAE and Egypt would stand behind Afghanistan against Qatar. It did not fruition. Things were moving forward at a very sluggish pace. But then US had a change of administration, and now things are very complex with regards to Qatar and Saudi Arabia. Things are have cooled down, the crisis, the so-called Qatar crisis. Tensions have been diffused to quite an extent, and probably Saudi will back away as usual. But we don't know, because there are a lot of factors involved, and each of these requires minute analysis. Let's not forget that it was the Taliban who killed diplomats from UAE in Afghanistan. So there are a lot of factors involved, and let's not think of Saudi and UAE as a monolith. UAE is definitely not a junior partner to Saudi Arabia. When you look at Yemen, and when you look at certain other areas in North Africa, they do not have extremely coherent strategies. I mean, in Yemen, for a long period of time, till Saleh was allied with the Houthis, the Emiratis, that is UAE, were also funding Saleh, who was fighting the Saudi-backed Hadi government, the Saudi-UAE-backed Hadi government. So it's a complex situation. These are not things that some old academician will come and say that these are idiots and we can impose whatever we want on them. Afghanistan existed before 1974. Afghanistan existed before 1800s, and it's not going to go away. Now the question is, just like individuals for their own egos complicate things and create misery for everybody, will the countries that actually eat the care about terrorism, will they use it for geopolitical purposes? By geopolitical purposes, I don't mean sponsorship of terrorism. I mean, do they want to play around with diplomacy and politics and just ruin another country yet again? How many times can you ruin Afghanistan? It's not been 40 years and it's been ruined multiple times. I mean, it's time that just for conscience sake they wake up, and the Afghan people have woken up. You can't impose things on them. You couldn't in 89, you couldn't now. They'll be fighting. So the question is that this is going to be a war of narratives by academics who are on benefiting and seeking to benefit from whitewashing the Taliban, or whether it is about fighting on the ground. The Taliban is not going to have it easy. It's just five sub-tribes of the Pashtuns who form the main body of the Taliban. And when we look at Pashtuns, they are not a monolith. The Pashtuns have had sub-tribes who have allied with the British against the Afghan king. You had Pashtun sub-tribes who even allied with Maharaja Ranjit Singh. These kind of stupid analysis and saying that it is all a result of a Ghilzai Durrani rivalry and everybody should look at some weird kind of jargon and convoluted analysis is not going to work. I mean, if something doesn't make sense, it doesn't make sense. You might have two postdocs, but it doesn't make any sense. Then it doesn't make any sense. 1 + 1 should equals 2. If it becomes 3, if you have a postdoc, then I think you should get your brain examined. I'll get to a more subtle analysis of this later on. This is for now. Signing off, this is Avik Singh.